Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbite. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
That's exactly right. We are here to answer your computer questions. Who are we? I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And over there is our producer on the buttons, Mr. Rob Linton. Let's hear it, ladies and gentlemen.
Performing his magic.
Okay, we will be taking your calls in just a minute. But before we take your calls, we're going to talk about the news of the day. And we're going to start with the Macintosh news with Steve.
Apple added a new build-to-order feature on the Apple Store and through Apple dealers like us at Jesse Group. The new NVIDIA GeForce 4 Titanium Super Whizbang video card. 128...
They call it Super Whizbang?
Super Whizbang.
Those Apple people.
We need better terms,
creative,
though. It's too many things are Super Whizbang now. We need something better. 128 megabytes of DDR memory on the video card.
Yeah.
Two digital video ports, so now you can have those twin 22-inch cinema displays. 5 billion pixels per second. So if you're doing really...
Only a Mac, you know, always got to have...
No, there's a bunch of PC people out there right now drooling over.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Drooling, yeah. If you're doing a lot of high-end 3D realization, working with Maya, for example, or CAD software, 3D modeling software, or games, you can squeeze those three extra Quake frames out.
Yeah, right.
It's a really, really slick card. It's available as a build-to-order option. It adds about $250 to the price of the machine itself, or it will be available shortly as a standalone card for about $500. So it's something that a lot of the high-end people are really anxiously awaiting.
Excellent. Dave, you have some very important information.
Yeah, number of folks, I'm actually ahead of this one for once. We've already got it up on our website. If you go to wham1180.com and over down on the lower left-hand side, you can get to the Soundbites webpage. We have already put up a correction. If you folks have gotten McAfee 6.0 and started to experience low memory or can't scan memory when it boots up, it's a known issue. What happened was is when they coded the program to install, instead of putting scan PM in the auto exec, they put a boot scan, and it causes the error that you will get that you can't scan the memory on boot up. So if you go to our webpage, down over on the lower right-hand side, I've already got the fix. It's a step-by-step instructions in telling you how to correct it. Just print it off, and it will solve the problem for you.
Excellent. That's the kind of service you get from Soundbites. And I'm just going to talk slightly a little bit. You've probably been following in the paper the latest AOL debacle.
That's unbelievable.
Have
they found who to blame yet?
Well, yeah. The problem is that the AOL folks, people who use AOL, are suddenly getting bills for like $1,000, long-distance phone bills, because they're now calling numbers in Buffalo. 1,000 people have said they did not change the number. AOL says they never change your number. Frontier says we don't know what's going on. So everybody's trying to figure out who's the story.
Yeah, I heard on Lonsberry's show, somebody called in, had a $2,500 phone bill.
Yeah. The one way we're thinking that might happen is when you set up AOL, you give it your area code, it gives you a list of phone numbers. Well, with 716, you can get Buffalo and Niagara Falls. So if you happen to pick, you know, Rochester is your primary number, you can pick multiple numbers in case one's busy. If you happen to get, like, Buffalo or Niagara Falls in your third or fourth number, it's possible that at some point when a number is busy, it leaked into that third or fourth number.
But there's thinking. The thinking is because AOL says they've got evidence to prove that they're not wrong, and they're ready to, you know, back it up, that it's into Frontier, that they've made the switch that wasn't supposed to take advantage or take effect until August, that now it is automatically being switched over to the Buffalo number and not switching back here to Rochester. And
something is happening with the area code change that the AOL software is confused about. You just give it a phone number. It doesn't care where it is.
Right. But at any rate, that's and that'll come back to us in the poll this afternoon. We'll talk a little bit about the poll when we come back at 1 o'clock.
So anyone using AOL dial-up, go into your setup and verify those phone numbers are Rochester numbers.
That's exactly right. And make sure you've changed your area code in your software to 585. that should also help solve the problem. We're going to go to the phones now, and the first person we're going to talk to is Andrew from Rochester. Welcome, Andrew. What's your question?
Good morning, or good afternoon. I'd like to say hello to Dave and thank him for the help in the past.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
My question is, I have Netscape 4.78, and I've just changed computers, which I've done before, and have saved all my previous mail. And this time, on this particular computer, I'm having problems opening it. It's telling me I am having permission errors. I believe I've set it up correctly. I've done it many times before when I've used my previous mail on different computers. And I was wondering if you might have any ideas about how I can fix this problem.
What operating system is on the new machine?
Windows 98, Windows 98 Second Edition.
There is no permission in Windows 98.
There is no permission. Well, there's permissions inside Netscape. If Netscape thinks you're not the user that was originally assigned, two things can cause this. One is a corrupted file. It could be that when you moved the file over, it did not either save or restore correctly.
Okay.
You might try restoring.
Or
if that's a word. The other thing it could be is that your username, your nickname, is slightly different than it was on the old machine. In that case, it would get very confused.
Okay. I have found that what I did is I took the old files from a previous computer, which was Windows 98 Second Edition.
Yep.
I backed them up. I loaded them onto my wife's computer, which uses Millennium Edition. I was able to open the files up with no problem. I then tried to load the same file onto the laptop with Windows 98 Second Edition, had that problem, tried making a CD from my wife's computer of the same files, which were working, and tried opening them up on my laptop. Both yielded the same results.
Okay, then there's one of two things. One is it could be that the load was the install. Obviously, you did two different installs, so it probably isn't that, but it could be that you've gone to an area of the disk that's not quite right. And if you overwrote the same files,
yeah,
it'd go to the same place. So do a thorough scan disk of your system.
One other thing I might suggest is, and I'm liking it quite a bit, is the Netscape 6.21, actually. It'll go over and grab your old Netscape, pull in your mail, your bookmarks, the whole nine yards. You might want to try that, too.
But also check your username and make sure it is identical.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites. Only on 1180 WHAM.
Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
He says any computer question. I don't remember a lot about the Exidy Sorcerer, but I suppose if you call in, we'll make something up. But
you can ask any question.
Yeah, that's right. You can ask any. But he said we can answer any question. Sometimes
the answer is,
I don't know.
Yeah, we can.
Our next caller is Sean from Rochester. Sean, what can we say I don't know to today for you?
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I have an old computer, an AMD K6350. With an Asus motherboard, and it's been sitting for about 2.5 years in the closet.
Yeah.
And I decided to go ahead and pull it out and try to get it working again. So I went out and I bought a hard drive and a video card, both of them used. And I put them in, and I connected all the wires, and I go to turn it on, and the light on the internal hard drive comes on. My power light on the computer doesn't come on, and nothing comes up on the monitor at all. I've tried two different video cards.
Could be the motherboard.
Might be the motherboard battery. That's a change.
Not if anything. If nothing is coming up on the, he plugs it in, you hear things going, that's usually the DMA controller on the motherboard.
Do you happen to know if this model of Asus motherboard has built-in video?
It's a VP97 or something. I don't know.
You can look that up on Asus's website. But if there's more than one video card in there, it may be that the internal video card, the cheap one built into the motherboard, is taking the signal and not putting it out on the card you bought.
Yeah. There's only one slot for the video.
Yeah, but some of these motherboards.
No, I mean in back of it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it might have been there and never connected up to anything.
Yeah. Right. What you might want to do is, if you can go to another computer, is look up the specs, or if you have the manual, It's going to actually have to read it.
I downloaded the manual for that motherboard because it's the same one I have at home.
There you go.
I can't understand it.
Yeah. But see, if it, see, sometimes they would just supply you with a plug that would then go into one of the slots, and you would then hook up the monitor to that. So it might not be actually on board. You know, it's on board, but it was through a cable.
And in addition, if you reset the BIOS at any time, it might come back up, even if it had been turned off previously. The other thing is, you might did you try the video card in different slots?
Yeah, I did, two different slots.
Okay. But I would check that first. That sounds like the most likely thing. If the power light doesn't come on, that may just mean that it's not connected correctly, because that has to be connected onto the motherboard in a certain spot in a certain way, and everybody screws it up the first two times. But if the hard drive light comes on, then you know power's coming from somewhere. So I would suggest that you look at that BIOS and see how it's set up. You're going to have to look for a jumper or something.
Well, yeah, I can't even get into that. I can't get nothing to come
right
up on the monitor.
You have to look for a jumper. If not, then...
There's usually a BIOS reset jumper.
Video cards don't have jumpers, do they?
Not talking about the video card itself. You're talking about the motherboard, which may have a jumper to determine whether you use internal or external video.
Yeah, you might have to change that.
Right.
All right, I'll get the flashlight out.
There you go.
All right.
You're going to have to look at the manual, and as Steve said, you can download it from Asus's website, asus.com.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Our next caller on Soundbites is Terry from Rochester. Welcome, Terry. What's your question?
I've got a problem with my machine when it boots up. I'm getting a limited virtual memory error. It says the page file is too small.
Okay.
And at times I get a Windows created temporary page file.
Right.
Now, this happened after I played around with passwords and also my share on the C drive.
How much free space do you have on your C drive?
There's a lot. There's 13 gig free.
You didn't move your swap file to another drive, did you?
No, I didn't. I've only got one, just the C drive.
When you say you messed around with the share of the C drive, what do you mean?
Originally, when I looked at it, it showed that share was on, so I turned it off.
Yeah, that shouldn't bother.
That wasn't it. What you can do, what version of Windows are you running?
2000 with Service Pack 2.
Well, first you need to update your Service Pack. Windows 2000 just released 17 megabytes of updates.
The security roll-up.
The security roll-up. You need to download all of those and install them. If you're on a dial-up connection, then God bless you, just start it and go to bed. But if you're on, you know, some sort of broadband connection, then it won't take long.
I think I did that. I think I went onto their website. And, you know, it fixed the problem temporarily.
Right.
But when I rebooted, it messed it up again. So I went back out and re-downloaded that.
Yeah.
And it did the same thing.
Okay, then what's clearly happening at some point is either... What antivirus software are you running?
Norton.
And when was the last time you updated it?
Just a couple of days ago.
Are you running the Norton SystemWorks or just the antivirus?
Just the antivirus.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Then what you probably want to do is go into the system settings, go into the device manager. You'll see a setting for virtual memory.
Yep.
Go in there and see what it's set at. It should be set at 3 times your real memory. So if you have a 128 meg of RAM, then you're going to want to set it to 384 meg.
You know, it won't let me set it.
Oh. Okay. What?
I've got it set. Initial size, 800 megabytes.
Yeah?
Maximum size, 1600 megabytes. And I hit set, and it doesn't seem to have any effect. Now, down below, it says...
Turn down your radio, will you? It's making me crazy here.
I don't have it on.
No, it's just feedback.
Okay, it's just feedback.
You
right?
might want to check. Isn't in 2000 there's limits, though?
Or
the minimum and maximum that you can set the paging?
But, yes, but he's above them. If he's at 800 and 1600, he should be fine. You can set as much virtual memory as you want in Windows 2000. And, in fact, sometimes you need to do that because
but it'll sit there and say, it'll give you recommendations.
There is a choice for let Windows handle memory. Virtual memory. Have you tried that one?
I don't see that.
There should be a setting above where you set memory. There should be a radio button on or off, a little checkbox on or off, that says, let Windows do it.
No, I don't have that.
Okay. How many hard drives do you have?
Just one.
How many partitions?
One.
Okay.
These are all the wrong answers.
Yeah, really.
Call back when you got some.
In Windows 2000, are you the systems administrator?
Are you logging into an administration account when you're trying to change this?
I've tried both.
You can only do this stuff under the administrator's account.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not under admin right now.
You have to be under admin to do these things, and at that point, you may see the additional option of let Windows handle it for you.
Okay.
But you can only make these changes as the administrator.
The other thing I was thinking is adding another hard drive and putting the swap over there.
That would work if it'll let you do that, and that would be fine. But the point is you have to be administrator when you do that.
And make sure you put the second hard drive on a different chain so it doesn't have to shut down the first one first.
Right. But try that and let us know.
Okay.
Okie doke?
Thank you.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mr. Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites at 1180 WHAM. That's right, it's Soundbites, and you're listening to the longest running and doggone best, in my personal opinion.
Mine too.
Computer call-in radio show on Earth, and our next caller is Bruce.
And
from
a couple
Henrietta.
Of outer planets as well.
And a couple of the outer planets. By the time the signal gets out there, there's like people from Alpha Centauri in a couple of years will be listening to us. Actually, they've been listening to us for 8 years now. Our next caller is Bruce from Henrietta. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Hanging in there. Well, this is Geek Week for the We Do Windows user group.
Sure.
I just want to make sure I get that out, and I have a question for Steve. The meeting this week will be on the second Thursday of the month, as usual, which happens to be Valentine's Day, but for most geeks, that is not a problem.
Just get her a new mouse pad.
Yeah. And.
What do you mean, get her? Most geeks don't have her.
All right, let's move on.
Right. Anyway, the topic of the meeting is going to be trends in storage, and it'll be presented by the regional representative of Seagate Technologies. So I imagine it'll be heavily weighted toward magnetic media because Seagate is into hard drives and backup tape backup
sure.
solutions.
Sure.
It'll be, as usual, at the New Horizons training facility in Building 60 at Corporate Woods on the third floor from 7 to 9.
And for those of you who haven't written that down, you can check out Jack's List at jackslist.com, which lists every computer user group in Rochester.
Yes, and which is on the Soundbites website.
That's right. It's on our list of websites.
Yes. I think that's really good. Now, my question for Steve.
Yeah.
Well, everybody else is embracing OS X. I've resurrected my Mac Plus for my toddler.
Yep.
So I'm relearning how to use System 6 and 7.1 and searching for appropriate software that she might like and use. I've hooked up a 20 megabyte hard drive to it.
Remember, those were so huge.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, very expensive in its day, too.
Yeah, horribly.
Yeah, so anyway, your son's probably using top-of-the-line iMac. But anyway.
No, I've still got my cube. It's 3 years old and getting rusty.
You can't. Wait, what's the question, Bruce? Yeah.
The question
really kind of have to move on.
How can I determine when I'm searching for appropriate and runnable software? A lot of them don't say that it will run on in a black and white or color until you go to the trouble downloading it and expanding it and whatever and running it. And in my case, I have to transfer it to the from my machine that's on the internet to the Plus. Is there some quick way of determining the compatibility of a Mac program that was designed for Plus or black and white? Versus?
Typically by the creation date. If it was created about 10 years ago, then it will probably work on a machine about 15 years old. That's almost the only way. There used to be big distinctions when the Plus came out and then the next models, they said it would work on the new model. But now, everything is Power Mac only. I don't think there's any software that will still work on 68K anymore. So you have to go to the older archives. And one of the best of the older archives is the InfoMac Hyper Digest.
Right.
At info-mac.com.
Which I'll expect to see on the soundbites.org website, list of websites now.
Yep. We'll put it up during the commercial.
Yeah, and it's still run by MIT.
Okay.
But that's a very big list of a lot of older software that you'll probably have better luck running on something like the Mac Plus.
Well, I also...
In fact, there also was, I think it was this week, one of the news sites... came out with a new website that just came up, a web server hosted on a Mac Plus.
Cool.
Wow.
With two floppy disks.
Wow.
Cool.
Just to show it could work.
Well, I did find a site that is Pro System 6.
Mm-hmm.
There's some site out there that thinks System 6 was the peak of... OS, they like the fact you could boot off the floppy instantaneously,
yep.
Practically.
You also might want to look at lowendmac.com and mac512.com.
Okay?
Okay, well, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot. We got to take a break, but we'll be back in just a short while with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, and all of you on the phones, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites at 1180. WHAM. Before, I was just really talking to myself.
No, you were talking to us.
Oh, that's not new. Okay, that's not new.
Voices in your head.
Exactly right. And so far, I'm arguing and losing. Go ahead, Steve. You had something you wanted to say?
Yes. I also want to mention the Apple Cider Users Group meeting this Wednesday night at East High School, 7 o'clock. Our big event this week is we're raffling off an iPod.
You could have brought it here. I would have, taken it right here.
That's right. Yeah. We could have taken it.
There are still tickets available. There's a few down in my truck. If anyone wants to, the winning ticket's already been sold to someone in this room.
Oh, that's right. And clearly, since we don't have tickets yet, it must be you.
I got mine.
But yeah, you guys bought tickets
legal.
A month
Nobody's
ago.
Nobody's going to get up. Oh, we already bought tickets. Okay, that's good. I got mine sitting here then. All right, we're going to get to the phones again, and we have Pat from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
Well, I got a laptop for Christmas from my kids.
Nice. All right. You got good kids.
I know.
After all the years you've slaved over them, right?
Yeah. But I put in the AOL 7.0.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tried to select my phone numbers, every time I tried to select the 585, they told me I would have to dial a 1.
Yeah, that's been that's been going on for a while, Pat. What's happened here seems to be a little bit of confusion. People, you're lucky you haven't gotten online yet.
Yeah.
There are people with $2,500 phone bills. Because what happened over the last month is suddenly they were calling a number in Buffalo and racking up huge long-distance charges, literally thousands of dollars. And so right now there's a little confusion between AOL and Frontier as to who's to blame. And so all those folks are kind of in limbo. Maybe what you need to do is to call the folks at AOL and ask them why, when you put in your area code, it tells you you have to dial 1. Then perhaps you want to...
It'd be interesting to hear the response.
And then you want to call Elliot Spitzer and tell him that's what's happening with your system.
Okay.
What's happening is the disk you have was created before the area code change took over. So what you might try doing is putting in 716 and then... be very careful about picking a Rochester phone number. And the phone numbers it lists, you might want to call the operator and make sure it's still a Rochester phone number.
But AOL has them listed. I just set up a 60 for a client,
but that's
and
what
it's
you,
got the 585.
Depends on the installer.
But that's what you want to try to do, Pat, okay?
All right.
We got to go. We're going to be back in just a few minutes after the news. We have Dave Enright. We have Steve Ray. We have Rob Linton. We have me, Nick Francesco. And you are listening to the longest-running radio show on Earth, Soundbites, on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Okay, so you're saying what? That little red button?
That one means now we can talk.
Hi there, I'm Nick Francesco, and I'm sitting here with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mr. Rob Linton. Who's feeling a little left out. When you call up, say hi, Rob, when he answers the phone.
He takes good care of us.
He's feeling a little behind what's going on. We're going to talk about the polls for a minute. Last week's poll, and I'm very pleased, 256 of you.
That's great.
That's two to the something. gave us an answer in the poll. And this related specifically to our, if you're in the forums, you know that we have had an ongoing question about archiving the old shows, which we used to do, and now we're fighting our way through the corporate policy to see if it can be done again. I don't know. I don't have any answer. I don't have a clue. But we've asked people what they want, and the choices were archives, a live audio stream, or on the air in my city. Unsurprisingly, clearly Argyle and Bon Vivre went around and
quite a few computers,
a whole bunch of computers, and answered this one. We had 124 votes for archives. What shocked me is the second choice for our pollers was on the air in my city. We got 67 votes for that. What that seems to mean is that 67 people bothered to answer the poll who don't even get the show.
Yep.
Now, that tells me that we could be popular other places if
Bingo.
We were on the air in those cities. Think about it. So we're, and by the way, did you set the tape? The disc, mini disc,
excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, although we can't archive it, I'm putting the show on mini disc for myself, and heck with the rest of you. and then the third candidate, I'll be hearing from both Argyle and Bon Vivre about this one. And then the third choice was live audio stream, 65 votes. Thanks very much. 256 votes is terrific, and I want to thank each and every one of you who voted. This week, we seem to have about 60 votes in the poll so far, and it's a different poll. This one relates directly to our news item today about AOL causing a problem, mostly in the Rochester area. So those of you who are not in Rochester but listening to the show, since we now get out quite a distance outside of the 585 area, no? Those of you who are not in this area don't have the problem, but you may still use AOL. And the question is, do you use AOL? Yes, no, I used to, but not anymore. And I expect I will in the future. So far we have 62 votes, so please go to the polls. At you can get there very easily. Go to wham1180.com. Go to the main page down in the lower left. There are a bunch of buttons. You'll see our three smiling faces on the Soundbites button. That'll take you to the Soundbites page. You can leave a comment. Notice it's a comment, not a question. We don't actually answer questions off the air. We have what we call lives. But we do... There is a link.
When did you get yours?
I downloaded it last week off of BearShare. So I don't know how I did that. But you can get to our site, soundbites.org, and you can vote in the poll. And we'd love to have you do that. But we're going to go back to the phones now.
Wait a minute. One thing I wanted to encourage folks, and they've been doing a great job of it, is signing up for our soundbites. We have a guest book there. Feel free to put in your comments in that there. We appreciate those. We read them all. But also register for the soundbites form. And a lot of folks have been doing it. They've been putting in their city and state. And we don't sell any of this information, anything else. We just like to know who we're getting out to. And we've been averaging a good 10, 12 folks per Saturday. So keep up the great work and enjoy it.
Yeah, we would love to have as many of you as possible join us in the polls. We do. People answer each other's questions in the forums, so if you've got a question, that's a lovely place to leave it. We've currently got 482 registered users. Our latest one is Jay LeBlanc, and there are over 1,200 messages in the forums, so feel free to join us in the forums. But now you can join us on the phone. At least Jim from Penfield can do so. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, Rob. Hey, my wife is. I'm calling on behalf of my wife.
Here we go.
Uh-oh.
All right, it's not me. It's my wife.
No, I really. She's the computer expert here. But
put her on.
We have audio problem. When we use our USB ports, the sound breaks up.
Oh yeah, that's easy.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, the answer is easy. How to fix it is hard, but we don't care about that. That's your problem.
Well, in other words, we just unplug the everything from the USB port.
Well, here's the deal. Most of the devices on your system require some sort of interrupt request line. That is to say, if the device needs attention now, it sends an interrupt request that says, "Stop what you're doing. Pay attention to me. I've got something that has to be done right now."
Like
high-speed devices, but high-speed devices like USB ports and do-it-right-now devices like sound cards have to have IRQs.
Mm-hmm.
What it sounds like is that your sound card and your USB port are sharing an IRQ. And consequently, the system is getting a little confused. When two devices try to access the same IRQ at the same time, you have a problem, and that sounds like what's going on here.
The easy way to check that out is if you go into Control Panel, under System is Device Manager. If you look at the items in the Device Manager, quite often, it will either have a red X or a yellow exclamation mark indicating the devices that are causing you the problem. Are you also using Windows 98 Second Edition?
Windows 98?
You're using 98 Second Edition?
I don't know if it's Second Edition. Is it Second?
Again, when you go in the Device Manager, it'll tell you what version of 98 that you're using. When you're connected to the web, I would also recommend getting the Windows 98 Second Edition USB update.
Or even if you're running First Edition, there were several USB updates as well.
Yeah, and you can go up to the Microsoft website and download that patch.
Yeah, so download the patches for USB. That's very important. If you're not running Second Edition, you may be coming up on your last chance to go out and buy it because Microsoft is clearly going to discontinue it soon.
Yeah, she tells me it is Second Edition.
Okay, okay.
What's
good.
The clock speed of your computer?
The clock speed?
How fast? Pentium, you know, like 2500?
We got Pentium 3. 500 megahertz.
Yeah, that's more than fast enough. So the problem has got to be
IRQ
problem.
Yep.
Okie doke.
So what do we do about that? Interrupt request line?
Right. What you can do is go into the device manager and see how they're set.
Device manager, yeah.
Right. And if there is a conflict, you should be able to go into each device and set it to be a specific IRQ.
Oh, I see.
Some will allow you to do that. Okay. Otherwise, it gets into starting up in safe mode, going into the device manager, removing those items, shutting down, having it restart, and have it refine and determine what IRQs they want to be on.
Or it might be a sound card.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Okie doke?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Our next caller, Lori from Webster. Welcome, Lori. What's your question?
Hi. I just purchased a brand new iMac flat panel.
Cool.
Sure.
It's very cool. It just arrived yesterday.
Steve's sitting here drooling.
No, we actually finally got ours in, so we now have a display model at the shop.
Good, good.
Well, you had one yesterday.
Well, we haven't sold the display model yet, but we got people asking.
Yep.
You're probably going to be seeing mine on Monday.
What happened?
The problem is, well, first of all, the mouse they sent me was completely broken. It doesn't work at all. The second problem is that I've got a pixel blown on the monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent an hour and a half this morning on the AppleCare line with their tech support, and they told me that 99% of flat panel displays will have at least one pixel blown, and that there's not really much you can do about it.
Wrong. That's actually a lie. It's more like 100%.
I mean, is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much every flat panel will have a couple pixels blown.
We've got another flat panel at home. It's a Samsung. It's perfect. We've had three or four laptops. Never, ever, ever.
A lot of times they're near the edge and you don't notice them.
Yeah, see, mine is right in the middle of the screen. Right. I'm a graphic designer.
Problem. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I haven't seen the new policies yet, but I know the on the older laptops, if you had a certain number of dead pixels, they would replace it. Or if you had two that were a certain distance together, that didn't come out right. If they were close enough together,
right,
it was considered a defect and replaceable. We'll have to check with Apple's policy now to see how many pixels have to be blown before it's considered a warranty replacement issue.
Well, they've told me that they're going to make an exception and they will replace just the screen, not the whole computer. But
right. And that's one of the problems that have hindered the flat panel implementation is that they are so difficult to manufacture because the pixels blow so easily. When you're talking about millions of transistors and millions of pixels in a flat panel, trying to get especially the larger sizes, you know, when a laptop was 10, 12 inches, that was nothing. Now we're looking at 15, 17, 22. I think Samsung's got a 36-inch flat panel.
Right.
They're a lot more expensive and they're a lot harder to manufacturer.
Let's say you've got 99.9% good pixels. If you've got 150,000 pixels on the screen, that still leaves you quite a decent number of them that could be bad and still fall within the tolerance.
Yeah, but like you say, to have it any place but right in the middle.
Yeah.
Right, right. Particularly if you're a graphic designer, it's a problem. So yeah, as long as they're going to replace it, I think you're on your way. It's It's a sad thing to have happen, but I think you'll be fine once it's reported.
Yeah, I guess I was just surprised by that statistic and really wanted to hear from someone else if that was true. So.
Well, I mean, you know, do the math. Figure out how many pixels are on the screen. 99% of them are good. Figure out how many that leaves that could be bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there is no such thing as 100% perfect manufacturing. I wish it were true. I've got a laptop that has four bad pixels. Luckily for me, all but one of them is on the edge, and the other one is down in the lower right corner where it doesn't really bother me much.
Okay.
Steve, being one of the consummate geeks, is getting out his calculator watch.
More than 750,000 pixels.
Yeah, you've got one, too. I don't even carry a watch.
768,000 pixels, and you have one that's bad.
Right. Wow. When you look at it that way, it's pretty darn decent work, isn't it?
I agree.
But take them up on the break. They're going to change it. But it is true that you may find bad ones, and that's just
life.
The nature of the beast.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thanks so much.
Our next caller, Brian from Rochester. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I want to tell you, no other computer show even comes close to comparing to this one.
Well, thank God you. Bless you. Love
thank
to hear
you.
That.
Oh, the other ones make my nose bleed. and also, your last comment, the thought of no more 98SE makes me queasy also.
Yeah, isn't
well,
it scary?
I know it.
No one's going to make me go to ME or XP.
Oh, thank you.
Stand firm.
XP isn't bad, but it's got some pretty heavy hardware requirements.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I've witnessed ME, but not XP, and I think
second edition, I'll be honest with you, it will probably be around until at least the fall.
Well, I'm going to keep backups just in case.
Oh, yeah. By all means. But what's your question?
Well, a quick comment on the AOL thing before my stupid question, which is a short one. But I believe that it doesn't matter what version of AOL for this problem. I think they should update the access numbers from their server at their end. They should stop you the next time you go to sign on like any other ISP would. And I also believe that it's AOL's fault, not Frontier's, because if it was Frontier's, every dial-up ISP would have this problem.
Excellent, excellent point, Brian. Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah. Now for my idiotic question. I'm using Opera for email.
Yeah.
I cannot find the option to where if you send me an email and I reply, I don't want to send you back what you wrote me.
Quoting.
I cannot find the display header.
Oh, to not quote?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I know what you mean. I just don't know where it is. I don't have Opera. See, the problem is under my laptop. I don't have Opera on this machine.
It doesn't seem to be an email option anywhere.
Well, it may not be, because quoting in general is a good idea to give the sender an idea of what you were talking about, because it might be a week since they wrote the message to start with.
Well, it's just annoying not to be able to start off with a clean body. You know, it'll say display headers and a bunch of other garbage, and it takes up a lot of space, and I just end up deleting it.
Well, but there's no preference anywhere for quoting or attribution.
I don't see.
Well, what happens if you just click on new message and then pull in that person's address and start a fresh message?
Yeah, I could do that. I guess I'm just lazy and want to hit reply.
Sure. I understand that. I apologize that off the top of my head, I do not know how to do that.
Well, we can find out. We'll
find out.
And get back to you on it.
All right.
Okay. Somebody write that down. I'm not able to do that right at the moment, but I am looking it up on their website, and I'm not.
Have you checked in the help also? If you go into along the toolbar there, the help and the index, and do a search.
Just for quote.
On turning off or quotes within a message or messaging, and within the messaging there might be a sub category called quotes.
Okay, I'll try that.
Check in there.
Or quoting and replying.
Like everything else, no longer do they include manuals with most of the stuff. Everything is built onto the CD or into the help off the toolbar.
I thought it would be easy to find them. You can go under File and Quick Preferences.
Yeah.
That's where Java is and all that, and pop-up windows. I don't, it's not in there. And
well, try that out.
Okay.
We'll see what we can come up with.
Sorry.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Litton on the buttons, me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM.
Contact the guys the old-fashioned way. Use your telephone and dial 222-1180 or the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Welcome back to Soundbites with Nick Francesco on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I am Nick Francesco. It's so true. And I am sitting right next to Dave Enright. Who could be luckier than that? Yeah. Why, the guy sitting next to Dave, which would be Steve Ray. And across from us, Rob Litton staring eagerly at his monitor. And our next caller is Carl from Canandaigua. Well, welcome, Carl. What's your question?
Thanks, guys. On my computer, I'm running Windows 95. And some of the games that the kids play, you need to change the color palette and the display property.
Right.
When I change the try to change the color palette to a 16-bit, for example, my cursor will disappear.
Yep.
And how do I correct that?
Get the updated video drivers.
Is it the video drivers? See, I kept on working on the mouse driver.
No, video drivers.
Okay.
Or it could be that the video card isn't really capable of running that high, and it's pushing the chips on the card.
And the best way to find out the video card is through setup, or when you start up, it'll tell you.
Yeah, that's one thing video manufacturers have done for years. They usually tell you like an ATI 16-bit or, you know, whatever.
Some of them, though, are tricky because it might say S3, it might say Trident, and those are chipsets used by dozens of manufacturers. So sometimes you have to go into the computer itself and physically look at the card and hope the name and model number is on
it. Or check your documentation that came with the system.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Okay, thanks. Our next caller here is going to be Bill from Rochester. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Thank you. About a half hour or so ago, I caught your comments while in the car about AOL, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here. I just want to make sure I'm doing it right.
Yeah, no, we'd rather have people well informed.
So I went into setup to see that the area code, I guess, is what you were suggesting, to be sure that that was area code 716. It appears...
No, 585.
I'm sorry, 585. Old tricks never die.
Yeah.
And it appears when there are three numbers that it may go to. And it says to edit or delete, click on a number, and then edit or delete the number.
Right.
And when I do that, there does not appear to be any area code. But I did check all of the exchanges, and they're all Rochester exchanges.
Right. Apparently what's happened is that for some people, they either had a Buffalo number in there, for example, the third or fourth number, or the Rochester number they did have is somehow getting misrouted to a Buffalo.
Oh, you know what? I just had a thought. A number folks could be doing is they could be going up there, updating to the 585, but not eliminating the 716. So if they add the 585, it's added at the bottom of the list. So they're still dialing the 716.
Right.
What you got to make sure you do is when you add new numbers, make sure you get rid of the old ones. Because if you keep those old ones, it will still dial those first.
Right. You also may want to go to your modem control panel into dialing properties and change your area code there. And that assumes that Windows knows
what version
what to do
of
with
AOL
it.
Are you running?
7.
Okay, because I know in 6, because I just set this up yesterday for the client, when I went to set it up for him, it asked, okay, what area code are you in? And I said 585, and it came up with a list of at least 8 numbers for the Rochester area.
Well, and when I go in fact, I'm looking at it right now, there appear to be only 3 numbers. All 3 are Rochester exchanges, and then when it says to edit that, you click on one, and I...
Right.
I clicked on it, and then it says edit number here, and it just gives the exchange in the number. It does not give an area
there
code.
Should
I put an area code in?
No. The problem is that 716 phone numbers are now long distance.
Right. So if you dialed one that's an exchange in Buffalo, it will dial it as a long distance number.
Okay. Even though it doesn't need to dial an area code.
So as long as you've got all Rochester exchanges, you should be good.
Okay, great. That boils it down to the right answer.
Okay.
Great. Thanks
very
much.
We're going to take a quick break because it's time to update you on the Olympics. I know you're geeks, you don't care, but listen anyway. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Computer talk you can understand. It's Sound Bites, America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the internationally acclaimed Sound Bites radio show.
And we can do that. Why?
because our next caller is William from Oshawa, Ontario, Canada. Welcome, William.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
I believe you are our first Canadian caller ever.
This is an 82-year-old newcomer to computing.
All right for you. Congratulations.
Making his third Saturday attempt to get through to you.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to give you a private number, William. We don't have one, but we'd give it to you if we had it. What's your question?
Could you throw some light on strange messages appearing on booting up? I am in Windows ME with a 900 megahertz Athlon. Some tasks did not execute at their scheduled times because the task scheduler service was not running. You can review the list of missed tasks and attempt to run them again from within the scheduled tasks folder.
Right.
I don't know where such a folder exists.
There are a number of things that will try to run at certain times of the day. These are called scheduled tasks.
In the background.
Yes. And they will be things like defraggers or the
system
searcher,
System updaters.
The thing
update.
That searches for your documents and indexes them, antivirus updates, stuff like that. So if they're set to run at, say, 4 p.m.
Yes.
And your machine is off, they are an unrun scheduled task.
Uh-huh.
And so you get that message.
Yeah, but these crop up every time I reboot.
Yeah, they will.
You might have some scheduled tasks set for like 2 a.m. when the machine's
right.
always on.
The easiest way to check this out is down on the taskbar, down in the lower right-hand corner, you're going to see an icon that says the task scheduler.
Right.
If you double-click on that, that will open it up and
show you
the various things that are scheduled to run. Now, if you want to get rid of them, you can just sit there and say, you know, remove them.
Highlight the ones you don't want to run and remove them, or change the scheduled time if you do want them to run.
Well, so far I've jumped over it by clicking OK.
Right, because it's not an error message, it's simply a warning message.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
So the basic idea is if you do what Dave said and opened it up, then you can do what Steve said, which is let's say you turn your computer on from 2 to 7 p.m. every day.
Yes.
Set them to run at 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever that is.
Yes.
And then they'll always run and you'll never see that message again. But the deal is that they are simply informational messages. Now, they could be dangerous if the thing that's not running is your antivirus updater. But if it's only the thing that searches your hard drive to index all your Word documents, you may not care.
Yes.
So the best thing to do is to see how they're set and then change it to a time when you know you're going to leave your machine on.
Well, now, could you consider another one that comes up after this?
Sure.
It says, terminating thread due to a stack overflow problem. A VXD, possibly recently installed, has consumed too much stack space. Increase the setting of min-SPs in system.
Okay. Does it tell you which VXD it is?
No.
Oh, that's bad.
It goes on to say... increase the setting of min-SPs in system INI or remove recently installed VXDs.
There are
currently 4 SPs allocated. Press any key to continue.
Right.
It sounds like it doesn't know which VXD either.
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
That lot.
Well, what happens is if you look through the system, and here's how you do this. If you click the start button...
Yes.
Then select run.
Yes.
And type in sysedit. That's S-Y-S-E-D-I-T. That's all one word, short for system editor.
Yes.
You'll see a bunch of little windows that look like little notepads. You know, the notepad program that runs?
Yes.
It's essentially a notepad program with 4 separate windows in it. One of them will be the system.ini file, and it'll be listed in the blue bar.
Uh-huh.
If you go down through that, you'll find min SPs equals 4 somewhere.
Yes.
Set that to 6, 8, 10.
Yeah.
You don't want to set it too high. You don't want to set it to like 50.
No.
But you might want to try it
doubling it.
Yeah. Set it to 8 or 10 and leave it at that.
Yes.
That should solve that particular problem.
Good. Could you repeat the spelling of S-Y-S?
S-Y-S-E. As in Edward,
yes.
D as in David,
yes.
I as in international, T as in technical answers from sound bites. That's short for system editor.
Right, no E on the end of it.
Correct. No.
Okay, E-D-I-T.
You got it.
Thank you for your help.
The American spelling.
Keep going. I need to know how to register.
To register to what?
Us.
With you.
Oh, absolutely. You go to the soundbites.org website,
yes.
Click on the forums button, the
yes.
forums link, and then, unfortunately, this is the way the software works, and I really should figure out where it is and change it. If you look in the upper right, you'll see the big Soundbites logo on the left there. Right across from it on the right, it says Soundbites Forum, and underneath it in very tiny print is a whole bunch of stuff, the first choice of which is register.
All right.
And we would love to see you on there. Tell us what city you're from.
Thank you, sir.
God bless you, William. Keep it up.
Thank you very much.
82 years old and playing with computers.
Right.
William is now one of my heroes.
Really?
Art is still my number one hero, but right behind him is William. Our next caller on a cell phone, Dave. Dave, are you pulled over by the side of the road?
I'm just pulling into a parking lot here. So.
Excellent. What's your question?
I have to admire that last gentleman at 83 years old.
But yeah, bless him. 83 years old, I'd be wondering which home to go to. He's wondering where to find stuff on his computer.
Yeah.
God bless him.
Gentlemen, I have two printers. I have an HP printer, and I just purchased a Sharp 4-in-1. It's a printer, scanner, fax, copier.
Yep. Right.
And on the second one that I just purchased, it states that the parallel cables that I'm using needs to be 6 foot or less.
Right.
6 feet or less.
Yeah.
The challenge is, if I have an AB switch, and I haven't gone out and purchased these cables yet, but if I have an AB switch, and the first cable to the AB switch is 6 feet, what happens at that point?
You know better plug it right into the AB switch.
But, you're getting signal degradation. If the cable's too long, the signals die off too quick. And you're going to run into a problem because both the HP and the Sharp want bidirectional communication to tell the computer what's going on. Oh, you got a fax. Oh, I'm out of paper. So when you have the switch in one position, the other printer is going to complain that it can't talk to the computer is going to complain it can't talk to the printer.
Right.
It would be
a better solution.
Yeah, a better solution would be to get another parallel card.
Yes.
Cheaper than a switch box. Or if one of the printers can also run on USB, because most printers these days are USB in parallel.
Right.
One on USB, one on parallel.
Well, that helps me.
Yeah.
That's
great.
Okay, thank you.
That's what we like to hear.
Yay.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on your International Computer Show of the Air, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
To America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Got a computer question? Call the boys at 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco.
Oh, yeah. Get down. Get funky.
I like that.
Get up. Take a shower. And then listen to the international radio show, Soundbite.
Yeah, we're going to have him change that. We're probably the longest-running show in Canada, too.
Our next caller is Frank from Rochester. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
All right, guys. How you doing?
TJ,
great.
How are you?
This should be a quick question. I've got about a year ago, I bought an E-Tower. And came installed with that bad two-letter word, ME.
Nope.
And sorry to mention that in public.
That's right.
We've just turned off the mic.
Go ahead.
Is it possible, and I know you shouldn't do this, but, hey, I feel like doing it. Is it possible to go backwards and take that out and just put in an 8 or 98?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Highly recommended.
Not only is it possible, it's recommended.
It's highly recommended.
But you do have to take out ME first. You can't install 98 over the top.
You've got to if I just reformat the
whole
hard
drive?
That's
how it works.
It's the magic.
Make sure you back up all of your documents.
Right.
Twice.
Okay.
The other thing to keep handy or copy off of the ME install are the drivers for the specific hardware in that computer.
Yeah.
Or
download newer ones.
It came with that double boot up disk.
Right. Oh, but for 98 and ME?
Or for ME.
Yeah, make a note in the device from the device manager what specific modem it's using, what video card it's using, if it's using a network card.
Sound card.
So this way, if you've got to go hunting later for the drivers for it, you'll know what you're going looking for.
Or if you're lucky, the disk that came with the computer has the drivers in a separate folder, and it's not just a blanket restore.
Okay.
Okie doke.
That sounds good.
Good luck.
You'll be happier.
Caller is Pete from Greece. Welcome, Pete. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Windows 95. I've got two laptops, and I'm trying to do a direct cable connection. I went out and I got what I assume to be is the right cable.
That could be the problem.
Yeah.
Well, it says on the package, where did I put it? Here it is. Nope. It says it is for PC to PC transfer.
Okay.
It says not for printer sharing and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Of course, I tried it for printer sharing, but that's a separate call.
Separate call.
All right.
There's those two little pins that are different between the cables.
Yep.
Oh, okay. I've got one set up as the host. They're both running 95.
Mm-hmm.
One is set up at the host as the host. One is set up as the guest. I did put password protection on for the host. And when I go to connect and I go to listen, it says it's verifying user and password, and then it just disconnects on me. Now, on the guest laptop, I did set up the ID, the Windows, it prompts you for Windows networking.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I set it up to be identical, password and user ID and password. And on the host, when I did the password protection, I went in and put in the same password just to try to get it to work. And I can't tell what it is that it doesn't like.
Why put in any passwords or anything anyways?
Yeah, try taking the password out.
I mean, it might be having a problem. I mean,
it didn't work without it either.
But you're trying to use a program that came with Windows, right, to do this terminal connecting?
The direct connect.
Direct connect. And that was...
All right, I'll take passwords off. Hang on.
I mean,
make sure that both machines have the same... Oh, does it matter?
Work group.
Yeah, it does.
The same work group name.
The same work group name has to be for both machines.
Work group name.
But right. What I was going to recommend is I believe there's a couple shareware programs. They'd probably work on Windows 95 for doing just a simple task that you're trying to do.
File
it would probably work a lot better than the version that Windows just threw in there.
The commercial programs are something like PC Anywhere or Laplink. But there's probably shareware programs that do very basic file sharing and don't give you all of the extra features that something like Laplink does.
Right, or that the file sharing in 98.
That's what I would recommend because Windows 1 never really supported it, just like their backup program. You'd be in the middle of backing up and all of a sudden it would die on your trying to do a restore and it had problems with it.
It backed up pretty well. It just didn't restore
ever.
Yeah,
the 19th disk out of 20 fails and you had to start all over again.
Yeah, but rather than beating your head against the wall, try a different product. That's probably your best bet.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Okey-doke. Thank you. Our next caller is Sid from Irondequoit. Welcome, Sid. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I've got a Shinho 17-inch monitor, which we've had for about a year, but it's probably 3 or 4 years old. The color on it has changed from the normal color to a dark kind of reddish, bluish color.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried doing the corrections in the manual that came with it, and I tried doing things with the help online, the help Windows screen. But I can't get it to correct the color.
It could be the monitor itself failing.
Yeah, the tubes. The gun's in the tube.
Or it could be the video cable. Try wiggling the end of the cable, both at the monitor and the computer.
Video cable. Okay, I'm writing this down.
You could have a wire, one of the red, green, blue wires, is failing, so you're not getting, for example, the green gun, so you're only getting red and blue.
Is it like pinkish?
It's kind of,
Steve just said it on the head. It's the cable. It's most likely a cable.
If you're lucky, it's a cable, and that's a lot cheaper than the monitor.
Right. Yeah, not always.
If you're really lucky, the cable comes off of the monitor. A lot of monitors, the cable is hardwired.
Okay.
But if the cable is removable, you can replace that VGA cable for like $15.
We were wondering if it could be that there's too much on the same electrical line.
No.
That's doing it.
Not impossible if you've got a problem with marginal power in your building to begin with. It could very easily be that you're just not getting enough power to the monitor. Easy enough to fix. Run an extension cord somewhere else for a try.
Okay.
It certainly can't hurt to try that, but it's unlikely that that's the problem.
I guarantee you, Steve hit it right on the head. It's the cable.
It's especially common when people shove their computers up against the wall or on the back of the desk. That cable can get kinked pretty bad, and over time, the wires will fray inside the cable.
So if it does come off, the one from the cable to the computer.
You can replace
it. Try replacing it.
Yep.
All right.
Okie doke.
Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks. Our next caller is David from Rochester. Welcome, David. What's your question?
Hello?
Hello, David.
Yes, my question is that my wife purchased a Gateway a couple years ago, and on the Gateway it came with ME Edition.
No.
I understand that's a piece of crap.
You got it. Mm-hmm.
But anyways,
I didn't say it, but he did, and thank you very much.
But anyways,
can you say crap on the radio?
Can you take your CPU to a local store like Sayada or somebody, and they'll upgrade it to the current version? Windows or whatever.
You can put whatever you want to buy onto it.
But you do have to buy it.
And you have to verify the compatibility with the hardware in the computer.
Right. Right. So, for example, if you wanted to run something like XP Home, if you go to Microsoft's website, www.microsoft.com/HCL for hardware compatibility list, you will see that there is a whole list of things that don't run under the various operating systems. But
you might want to consider going back to Windows 98 Second Edition
is what I was going to say. It'd be highly recommended.
Which might just be better.
Well, that was my suggestion.
Yes, go that direction.
To go Windows 98.
There you go. Second edition, though.
We are done for another week. I want to apologize to everybody we didn't get to. I want to thank everybody who did call us, particularly William from Canada. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray for their able and incredibly brilliant comments today. Rob Linton, who keeps us sort of online, as much as it's possible to keep anybody online. We'll be back here next Saturday at 12:20. I'm Nick Francesco for Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. God bless America.